Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me as always, Corey Waldron and special guest, Steve DeWald of Blazers Edge. What's up, guys?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on.
Steve, pleasure, brother. Thank you for hopping on the pod to talk some Blazers.
As always, before we get started, just a quick reminder, you can check us out on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio. But before we preview the Blazers for next season, we're going to look back at last year. 49-33, third seed, obviously swept in the first round by the Pelicans. You know, really nice regular season, playoff disappointment. But what were your thoughts on last year, Steve?
I think last year was, we had 20 games of Yusuf Nurkic the year prior. And I think last year, especially the first part of the year, was to kind of see what exactly he was going to be once teams had a chance to really kind of look at that game film and kind of game plan for the Blazers with him in the roster. And really, it was a slow start for Portland. Maurice Harkless really had a tough time getting things going. And, you know, Yusuf Nurkic wasn't nearly as effective offensively. So that it was a little bit of a slow start. But then things really heated up, as they most often do for the Blazers, at least with Damian Lillard in the second part of the season. They had a very impressive winning streak that ran through the All-Star game. And on the other side, that really catapulted him into that number three seed. And then, I mean... Where you're somewhat used to regular season success with the Blazers, with Dame and CJ kind of running the show and being the focal points of the offense. And it really kind of just fell apart against the Pelicans. And I think part of it was, is a lot of people, you know, especially our readers at Blazers Edge and elsewhere, really were almost expecting a sweep of the Pelicans. And, you know, I was at least tempering that expectation. I knew it wasn't going to be easy. I mean, anytime you're facing Anthony Davis, it's not going to be easy. What I did not expect was Jrue Holiday being so effective defensively and offensively, being able to get – I mean, Holiday was able to get buckets against the Blazers whenever he needed to. And then Rajon Rondo was – I mean, playoff Rondo was real in the playoffs against the Blazers. And anytime you're able to really guard Lillard one-on-one – and then focus your defense elsewhere, it's just a complete nightmare for Portland offensively. And that's kind of what, how that season ended, unfortunately. And it really kind of left a bad taste in everybody's mouth heading into the offseason. And yeah, that it's a shame, because that winning streak was so much fun. And it was only, you know, weeks prior to being swept by the Pelicans. So I prefer to remember the winning streak instead of the sweep, but we'll see what this year brings.
I mean, this team was, I mean, really surprising. I don't think anyone had Portland going into the playoffs as a three seed. And like, you just look at like the points per game, and like, I know it's points per game, but like, you know, Lillard with 26.9, McCollum with 21.4, Nurkic with 14.3, and then every single other player is under double digits. Like, this was really a Lillard and McCollum led show. I mean, Lillard this season in particular, I mean, he was fantastic. You know, he seems like in recent past, it seemed like the second half of the season, he really turned it up, and pretty much from start to finish this season, last season, he was on fire. He's really one of the top point guards in this league. And, you know, I know everyone's, a lot of the rumors say like that you probably trade McCollum or, you know, something like that. I mean, that backcourt though is just really lethal. Those two guys do play really well off each other. I thought Shabazz Napier had a nice year. You know, it's unfortunate that Evan Turner makes so much damn money, because I feel like if they had that money to go elsewhere, they could probably better this roster. And the big part of why this team was so good, I mean, they were the third best team in rebounding, which I didn't know until I was looking at the stats. You know, they averaged 45.5 rebounds per game. Obviously they lost some of that with losing Ed Davis, but his team was really good in the regular season. Like you mentioned, that winning streak was really fun to watch. And then I picked the Blazers in five over the Pelicans. And obviously that went really bad really quickly. yeah. You know, Jrue Holiday, like you mentioned, I mean, he was just, I don't think anyone was prepared for that. I mean, he really put me on notice. And obviously we know how good Anthony Davis is. And that team just really got better after DeMarcus Cousins got hurt. You know, so it may look like a loss if you're a Blazers fan, because you get to the three seed and then you get ousted in four games in the first round. But this is still a really good season to look back on because of how much success they had with really, you know, no expectations of any of this.
Steve, if you had to put one thing that really hurt them in the playoff series from the Blazers side, was it Nurkic not being able to be on the floor? Was it Dame and CJ getting shut down and not having another scoring option? What was the biggest issue for the Blazers side against the Pelicans in the playoffs?
I think it's probably a combination of both of those. I think you want Nurkic on paper to be that third scoring option. And, you know, I mean, he just could not be on the floor if Mirotić was on the floor playing the five. I mean, he just can't get, he's just not equipped to guard guys on the perimeter, big men on the perimeter. And, yeah, I mean, it always hurts when you're depending on Al-Farouq Aminu to have one of his, you know, one of his strange games where he's making a bunch of three-pointers. You're in trouble. And, you know, CJ McCollum also did not do himself any favors in that series either. I mean, the goal, the hope would be is when Dame is really locked down and the defense is focused so much on him that CJ is able to pick up the, you know, that scoring load. And he really kind of struggled to really establish himself throughout that series. But, yeah, I mean, it was a sweep, but that series did have a couple games that were really close that involved Blazers comebacks late in the game. But it's just, they just did not have that third option, you know, period. And for some games, they didn't have a second option established either. So, and that really sticks out. And like, you touch on it a little bit with, you know, Evan Turner. Unfortunately, Evan Turner has a contract that he's not able to, by no fault of his own, is not able to live up to. I mean, of course he's going to sign that deal, but he's just in a situation now with how the NBA is gone that he's not going to be able to be established his worth at $17 million. And I'm not saying that money could have went elsewhere to, you know, just one single free agent, but it would have been nice to maintain some flexibility and bring guys in. I think Portland, and they talked about, the front office talked about bringing in, you know, some experienced veterans over the summer to kind of help with, you know, these playoff situations. And, you know, they could really only afford to bring in a Seth Curry, who's coming off of an injury, and, you know, Nick Stauskas, who's trying to resurrect his career, who's has one of the longest individual playoff droughts in the NBA. So it's not really what's being said in the front office and what actually happened wasn't able to line up. And a lot of that is due to, you know, lack of financial flexibility.
Yeah, I've heard that too from Blazers fans. You know, the front office is saying one thing and then the direction they went in free agency was different. But on a positive note, what was the biggest highlight of last season for the Blazers?
I think it's just Damian Lillard really, really took another step. And I know that's hard to wrap you, you know, really think about because, you know, he's already, you know, this established presence. But he really took a step on defense. I mean, he's been hammered for his defensive play, but I mean, he did a much better job navigating screens. And, you know, he dominated for long stretches of last season. And it, you know, it was nice to see him get rewarded with, you know, the first team nod at point guard. And, you know, for Portland, the list is pretty short for guys who make, you know, first teams historically. And I think that would probably be it. I think, you know, seeing Nurkic stay healthy for a year was big. I mean, he didn't play quite up to expectation on the offensive end, but defensively, I mean, he's the anchor of that team. And Terry Stotts has really adjusted his scheme defensively back to a lot of what they did with Robin Lopez, where they really funnel guys into there and really just ask Nurkic to collapse back in there, which also helps with the rebounding numbers. And he's always in position. And so seeing him stay healthy and seeing Dame really kind of get recognized for taking that step are probably the highlights for me from last year that I'll probably remember the most if you're looking back at the season briefly.
Yeah, for me, the highlights, for me, it's got to be Dame. It's just another year where Dame, I feel like, put his name in, you know, among the elite point guards. He finished in the top five for MVP voting, correct?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, which is a great, you know, obviously Portland isn't a huge market, and anytime you get, you know, your guy in there for the MVP voting, it shows, especially when they're being a three seed. For me, it's just Lillard. You know, the last two seasons in particular, his offensive game has just taken another jump. He's getting more aggressive. He just feels like he's coming into his prime. You know, he's 27, gonna be 28 this year, and I just like the progression. He's, you know, he's just getting better and better.
Yeah, same for me. I'm going to go with Dame. I think it was the month of February where he averaged like over 30, shot close to 50%, 6 assists, 4 rebounds. So I think just another big season from Dame Lillard. And like Steve was saying, picking it up on defense a little bit, getting some more respect around the league is always a good thing. But back to the negative side, biggest disappointment of last season.
Oh, well, you just digging it in. I think it's still it's still got to be the playoffs. To have home court advantage and not come away with a single win in a series is just unacceptable. And it's really tough to swallow. And, you know, it's been a couple of years now since Portland's won a playoff game. I mean, granted, one of those series was an opening round series against the Warriors. But I think that's probably, I mean, it's got to be it. And just seeing how frustrated everybody will. I mean, there were games and stretches of those games where there was just no answer. And it's bad when you can feel it from the stands that, you know, there's not really a solution to some of these problems that the Blazers were encountering. So I think the overall helplessness of the playoffs is probably the low point. And I'm looking forward to, the Summer League Championship was stemmed some of the disappointment. At least that's what I tell. Yeah, that's what I tell myself when I go to sleep. So I think that would probably be it for me.
Yeah, I think the disappointment on the season for me has got to be the getting swept in the first round after being a 3 seed. I think that's just the easy one. Being a 3 seed and how they were rolling, you know, that second half of the year, it felt like this is a team that could have made the second round. And obviously, as we know, like you said, there was just stretches of those games where this team just looked beat. You know, they didn't have an answer. The traps that the Pelicans were running for Lillard. I mean, McCollum shot pretty well in that series, but I mean, Lillard was just neutralized completely, basically. Not having a third offensive option was really a big reason why this team struggled. So for me, it's got to be that, you know, that playoff series just really showed the weaknesses of this Blazers team.
Yeah, spot on, guys. I mean, at times you almost felt bad for the Blazers players because, like Steve was saying, they felt helpless out there. So anytime when you're predicted to go in, I think I picked them in 6 or 7 to win. And pretty much I would say 60 to 70% of people who followed the NBA went with the Blazers in that series. And then to just get swept, it's just really – it was disappointing and somewhat confusing in a way because you didn't expect them to just get beat that so bad. But like you mentioned, Jrue Holiday was amazing. But on to this year's ranking. The Blazers are coming in at number 15. Do you think this is too high, too low, fair ranking? What are your thoughts?
You know, really, with the Western Conference, I think it's probably just about right. I could see Portland overachieving that ranking. I don't see them falling too much lower than that, at least right now. But I think that it's fair. I think there's so the Timberwolves are ranked right in front of them on your guys' ranking. And that's a team that I'm watching closely just because it sounds like there's some internal struggles there. So that's something I'm watching anytime. Like Milwaukee, I mean, they have Giannis, but, that's kind of it for me. There's a lot of pieces there that I want to see how they all work together under the new coaching staff. And then, I mean, the Nuggets are always one that I closely watch with the Blazers in the standings. And just because they've never really kind of made that jump as they're currently constructed, and it'll be interesting to see if they put it all together too. And there's a lot of guys that don't have, you know, playoff experience outside of Paul Millsap on that team that are in key roles. So those are the teams I could maybe see the Blazers, you know, outpacing. And then behind them, I mean, I think everybody should be watching Memphis. A healthy Memphis is still a very dangerous team and a team that is capable of giving Portland a lot of trouble. So those are the ones I'm watching. But I think 15 is probably fair.
Yeah, I think 15 is fair as well. I mean, you look at the top 15 of the power rankings, and 10 of the teams are from the Western Conference, which just shows you how tough that Western Conference is. And, you know, I think the Blazers are going to be its team. I don't think they're going to be a 3 seed this year. I think they're going to be back down, you know, somewhere near probably the 6 to 10 range. I mean, that's just how the Western Conference is. It's going to be one of those things where it feels like, you know, probably in, you know, late March, early April, where every game someone's going from a 6 seed to a 9 seed. I wouldn't be surprised if that's how close it is. So I think 15 is fair, especially with how the roster is currently. If Steph Curry comes back to how he was playing prior to his injury, then I might move him up a couple slots. I think he can be a really nice addition. This is fair for now.
Yeah, no complaints from me. I think, you know, a lot of teams in the West are obviously dangerous and they got better. And then the Blazers lost Ed Davis and Shabazz Napier. So I think that'll hurt them a little bit, but they could have some internal improvements from somebody like a Zach Collins. But on to the offseason, this year's additions. Simons, I believe, actually 24th overall, great athlete, you know, has some good handles, you know, needs to put on a little bit of weight and better effort on D. But what were your thoughts of drafting him number 24 overall?
I mean, obviously there was a lot of mystery around Anthony Simons coming in just because, you know, he wasn't a player you got to watch play at the college level. And he kind of, when he found out he was going pro, he kind of pulled out of a lot of those, you know, spring showcases. Like, he was originally on the list to perform at the Nike Hoop Summit and then opted not to, which, you know, if you're in a position where you're talking about a pro contract, you're probably better to do that. I really do like him, though. Yes, there's improvements he has to make to his body. I mean, the main symptoms is he's 19 years old. Like, his body will develop, and I think they will get him in a program. But he's very quick. I talked to him a couple weeks ago, and it sounds like he's getting the indication from the organization that they're trying to gear him up to be a point guard. But he will probably play a lot of two. Initially, he's got a very quick release. He looked like he knew what he was doing at Summer League, did not look out of place. And, you know, one of the big misconceptions is that, oh, he's straight out of high school, but he did play in their IMG Academy's post-grad system. So it's not quite up against high school competition. It's a lot of guys that are playing that extra year after high school to reclassify to, you know, better their recruiting standing. So, I mean, he's playing against guys that are equivalent to freshmen in college and guys who are going to end up going to big time programs. And there's definitely going to be a learning curve, but so far, you know, he looked like he adapted to the speed of everything at Summer League.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't know a lot about this guy going into the draft. As I've mentioned on previous shows, I pretty much watched March Madness, and that's where I get most of my college stock from. But yeah, in Summer League, he was solid, you know, 43% from the field, 34% from three, you know, 91% from the free throw line. He was solid. He looks like a rather complete player, as you mentioned. I didn't hear about him maybe playing some minutes at the one, but it's, you know, it's low risk, high reward. Why not?
Moving on to the second round pick, Jerry Trent Jr., 37 overall, you know, great shooter, needs to be better defensively. What were your thoughts on drafting him?
I was actually more geared to take Gary Trent Jr. I thought Blazers would give him a long look at pick number 24. So when they were able to get back into the second round and get him, I really liked the pick. I think offensively, he's a proven commodity. And, you know, his big knocks coming out of Duke was some of his defensive deficiencies, but really, that entire Duke team really had to – I mean, Coach K had to really nerf the defensive system for a lot of those guys last year, and I think it's more of a symptom of the problems overall with that unit. I'm a big fan of guys who are coming from a family that had a pro athlete in them, and, like, with his father being in the NBA, I feel like the business side of the NBA and adjusting to, you know, being in the spotlight is something – that he's not going to have to adjust to. Like, I feel like he'll be able to just hit the ground running and focus on basketball. And I think a lot of the other stuff that is shocking to these rookies is not going to affect him as much as some other people. Like, you look at a guy like Donovan Mitchell last year, who his father was a pro athlete. He was able to really just focus on improvement on the court. And so I'm a big fan of anytime you take those. The big thing with Trent for the Blazers, I feel like, is if he can play a little bit at the three. Like, if he can play a little bit of small forward, I think there's a serious path to minutes for him next year. And Portland needs floor spacers. I mean, that was one of the things that, you know, we talked about the Pelican series a lot, but that was one of the things that, you know, kept Nurkic off the court is that, you know, the floor wasn't open. And if you put a guy like Trent in the corner who can knock those down, I think that will pay huge dividends throughout the season. I'm very excited about Trent immediately. Like, I feel like Anthony Simons will eventually probably surpass him. And I think that's probably the plan in Portland, obviously. But I feel like right out of the gate, I think Gary Trent Jr. could very much look like a guy that was a second round steal for Portland. And Portland has experience with getting guys there. I mean, they have a lot of success with Alan Crabb at that spot. And, you know, Pat Connaughton was drafted around the same area, and he had a lot of success last year stepping into a role. I mean, relative success.
Yeah. I don't have a ton of thoughts on him, but I think because of what the Blazers need, which is, in my opinion, more perimeter shooting, I think Trent can be that guy. I'm not sure how quickly, but if you're high on him, I'm high on him.
Moving on to free agent signings, which we already mentioned a little, you know, Seth Curry, 1 year deal, 2.7 mil, you know, low risk, high reward, like Corey mentioned, coming off a pretty big injury. But if he is healthy, it gives him some nice depth and some nice shooting. Thoughts on signing Seth?
I mean, it very much comes down to if he's the same Seth Curry he was prior to the injury, and his injury was very serious. And, you know, it took him out of action for an entire year. What I do like about him is he's very good in the pick and roll, and he can shoot from outside. I think a partnership with him and Evan Turner in the second unit, I think, works. Both of them, I mean, he can play off the ball or he can play with the ball. I mean, Evan Turner obviously needs the ball to be effective on offense, but I think the plan was really to surround Evan Turner with shooters on that second unit, and Seth Curry definitely fits that mold.
Yeah, I mean, it's how he comes back from the injury. It was a stress fracture, right, in his leg. Is that what the injury was?
Yes.
Right. I mean, he's a good three-point shooter. I mean, the last couple of years in Dallas, he shot 45% and 42%. You got to love that. Like you mentioned, he's good in the pick and roll. It's just, you know, how does he come back? If he's that Seth Curry from Dallas, then this is a really good signing for them, because even though I liked Shabazz Napier last year, he's not nearly the kind of shooter that Seth Curry is.
They also signed Nick Stauskas, 1 year, 1.6 mil, pretty much veteran minimum. You know, this one I was a little bit more confused about because they signed him so fast. And I'm a big Nets fan, so I watched all of Nick Stauskas last year in Brooklyn, and he did not impress me much at all. But what were your thoughts on signing him?
I think to understand the Nick Stauskas signing, you have to understand kind of what the Portland's GM Neil Olshey approaches some of these free agencies. And if Neil Olshey liked you in the draft, there's a good chance that he is going to find a way to get you in a few years. I mean, you've seen this with guys like Al-Farouq Aminu, Maurice Harkless. I mean, those are guys that he was very open about being high on them prior in the draft process. And I feel it was just a buy-low thing where they thought that if Stauskas got into Portland's system, that he could reclaim some of that value that he displayed in the evaluation process. I mean, with him, it's a lot to be seen, and he is going to be competing for, like, kind of with Gary Trent, is there's minutes to be had at the three, I believe, off the bench. And if he's able to, you know, play at that position and space the floor, he will probably find minutes. But, you know, there's a lot to be seen. I mean, he's played on multiple teams now, and there's probably a reason for that. So tempered expectations for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he's still young, which is a plus. You know, he's going to be 25. If he can find a role as just being, you know, like a, you know, a Kyle Korver off the bench, a guy who can just come in and shoot, he can play, you know, 15 to 20 minutes, get off some screens and get open from three. But I think he has a spot in Portland. Defensively, I don't think he's very good. I mean, I could be wrong, but I just don't see him as a good defender. And offensively, I just think his game is limited. But I think in the right role and utilized correctly, I think he can be somewhat valuable. So I'm not totally down on it.
Yeah, well, we'll see what he can do. Like you mentioned, Steve, this is, you know, a big opportunity for him. He's been in Sacramento, Philly, Brooklyn, and it hasn't really worked out. But they also re-signed Joseph Nurkic, 4 years, $48 million. You know, people were both ways on this trade, but obviously Nurkic at 24 and being a starting center, I think it was a pretty solid deal. What were your thoughts on re-signing him on that number?
I feel it's a fair number. I think for what he brings, like if he was able to stretch the floor and do a little bit more and garden space, you're probably looking at more of like a Clint Capella type contract. So for his limitations, I feel that's probably right. Now there are obvious questions about paying a center who's had notable locker room or character issues at other spots. That's always scary when those guys get paid initially. And then also his injury history. He's really only had one full season of being healthy. So, I mean, there's definitely question marks, and I believe the last year on that contract has a partial guarantee. So, I mean, there is a way to get out of that deal if necessary, but there's a lot of ways for him to overachieve that deal, and or at least play up to that money. Unlike, you know, some of Portland's other contracts where those guys are not going to be able to live up to those deals. I think Jusuf Nurkić, if he really buys into the system now that he's gotten paid and continues to improve, I like it. And I people really forget how young he is. And there's still a lot of ways, and this will be the second year, a lot of ways for him to improve. And this will be the second year that he's playing at a lower weight. So it'll be interesting to see if he's able to add anything. I know he dabbled with a mid-range shot last year, and it'll be interesting if he fully embraces it. And he's someone who's definitely someone to watch in the FIBA qualifications that are coming up. I believe he's playing for the Bosnian team here in a week or so. So he's one of two Blazers. Alfred Kamino is also playing, but Jusuf is definitely someone I'm very interested to watch play and just kind of see what he's added in the offseason and what he's been working on.
I mean, I was slightly surprised by the number he got, but I don't think the Blazers could have afforded to lose him for nothing, or, you know, lose him and not have somebody to fill that center role. So I understand bringing him back. Like you mentioned, I mean, this guy is still so young, only going to be 24. You know, he has shown glimpses of being really dominant and really good. So it's just about being consistent. And then, you know, can he elevate his game on the defensive side of the ball? But I like Nurkić. I don't think this was a bad re-signing by any means. I mean, granted, you know, knowing what Cousins signed for with the Warriors, it would have been nice to maybe pursue that. But I don't think anyone kind of realized he was looking to take that kind of deal. And obviously, it being with the Warriors, it was kind of different.
Yeah, I think Nurkić, like, there's some small things that he can work on being so young that he can get better, and it's positive for the Blazers moving forward. But looking at departures, Ed Davis, Shabazz Napier, Pat Connaughton, CJ Wilcox, George Papagiannis, out of these guys, who are they going to miss? Who do you wish they re-signed?
I'm going to tell you who they're not going to miss. They're not going to miss Georgios Papagiannis.
Are you sure? No, I'm just kidding.
That was painful to watch in Summer League. It's terrible to beat up on someone who's out of the NBA now, but I have never seen someone so big be unable to use their body for leverage at all. I mean, I think he had 5 illegal screen calls in like the first 3 games in Summer League. And I was just like, what are we watching here? Obviously the Ed Davis thing is probably the one that hurts the most. And I think the thing that really stings for Portland is he has an obvious connection with Damian Lillard. That was, you know, one of his guys. And it was, you know, rumored behind the scenes that he was a guy who was going to give Portland a hometown discount. And for him to sign, even for just, you know, very slightly, just a little more for a little over $4 million, it was painful because that's basically the equivalent of what Portland has in dead cap from the stretch contracts of Anderson Varejao, Festus Ezeli, and Andrew Nicholson. So to lose a guy with that dead cap on your books when you're trying to just, you know, trying to give yourself flexibility to get under the tax line if you have to, that really stung. As far as Shabazz Napier goes, Portland has kind of, I mean, they let Tim Frazier go. They have kind of a history of, they feel like they can find another point guard or a third guard. And I think they probably already had Seth Curry already in their sights before, when they probably discussed what the future was for Shabazz Napier. Another good guy in practice. The guys seem to really like him. And the year he didn't play prior to last year, he was, you know, a lot of guys were talking about him because he was really pushing Dame and CJ in practice. So anytime you lose those guys, it could be potentially a problem. The big thing with Davis is the depth in the front court. I mean, you're really going to be relying on Zach Collins to make a leap, which I think he's capable of in certain aspects of his game, but there's a lot of stuff in the post that he needs to work on. And that's just, I mean, kind of like what I touched on with Anthony Simons. A lot of Zach Collins's problems are just a symptom of him being a 20-year-old big man in the NBA. Like, he's just got to develop his body and develop his anchor. And, you know, Caleb Swanigan was also a first-round pick 2 years ago. He could potentially see minutes in that kind of Ed Davis spot, but, you know, who knows? He's got a lot of stuff as far as his foot speed goes. But long story short, the Ed Davis size hole in this rotation will be noticeable, I think, at first. And they're definitely probably going to be exploring options to find guys who can just come in and rebound.
Yeah, it's definitely they're gonna miss Ed Davis. This team was third again in rebounding last season. Ed Davis was a big reason why, coming off that bench. So they're definitely gonna miss that rebounding. The team loved him too. I mean, that was a guy who felt like when he left, every single person on that team had something nice to say about Ed Davis, which just that also to me is meaningful and impactful. I think they're gonna miss Ed Davis, and then you know they might miss Napier in stretches, but you know obviously if Seth Curry is healthy, then I see that as a wash. And then the shooting of Pat is probably something they'll miss a little bit. But again, I think Ed Davis is probably the biggest guy you miss.
Yeah, I'm happy the Nets got him at a good deal, and Shabazz as well. But starters for next year for the Blazers, you know, opening night.
I think it's probably going to look a lot like it did at the end of last year. I mean, obviously the backcourt is going to be Dame and CJ. I think small forward is probably Maurice Harkless, because I believe the plan is to build the second unit around Evan Turner. Alfred Camino at the four, which he's defensively, and the flexibility he brings to the table at the power forward position is super valuable for what Portland does. And then at center, Yusuf Nurkic on his new deal. I don't foresee any real big shocks in training camp as far as the starting five go.
Yeah, for me, it's the same exact starting five. And I just want to say that Aminu has been following me on Twitter since 2015. I appreciate it.
Well, there you go. But same thing here for me, starting five. But any position battles you see, you know, it could be starting lineup, rotation. What are your thoughts on position battles?
I think, like you said, a small forward, I think Evan Turner has a chance to push for minutes. But I think it's the team is probably more constructed for him to be coming off the bench. As far as the main position battles, I feel like will happen, you know, in the second unit. I think who's going to claim the backup shooting guard position. I believe Seth Curry will probably operate as a point guard more often than not. But that also comes with a caveat of Evan Turner will probably do the majority of the ball handling at the small forward position. But I think Nick Stauskas, Gary Trent Jr., and I think even Anfernee Simons might be competing for some minutes at the backup too. Zach Collins, is he capable of playing, you know, regular minutes at center, or is he a power forward still right now with where his body development is? And then, you know, the question we've been asking ourselves for it seems like a decade here is Myers Leonard going to capture minutes in a lineup? And I think, you know, I don't have any comment on it because there's nothing that I can say about Myers Leonard that I haven't already said before. So, I mean, he's just got to put it all together on the court. And until he does that, you know, I'm not really going to put a lot of eggs in that basket. I mean, he has all the tools. It's just a matter of putting everything together.
Yeah, I think for me, the most intriguing thing is Myers Leonard and Zach Collins, what those guys become on that second unit. I think that's probably like the biggest battle is going to be for the backup center position. And I'm pretty sure Myers Leonard right now is like yoked, right? He had like a crazy offseason in building weight.
Yeah, he's been jacked for a couple of years. I mean, he looks like he should be, you know, one of the best centers in the NBA. He's his body and his frame it's unreal.
That's why I have a question. Just, you know, what do you think is his biggest issue that, you know, in so far through six seasons that he hasn't taken that step yet?
I could probably do a complete hour podcast on this if you want. But I'll hit some cliff notes. So he was originally drafted as a project. He was going to be, you know, kind of this rim-running center. And after a year, Portland scrapped that. And they decided we're going to make him into a stretch five. He's got a little bit of a shooting touch. So they had him working with a coach individually and working on his development. And, you know, things started to come around. And then LaMarcus Aldridge was going to leave. And the coach that was working individually with Myers Leonard kind of spilled the beans that LaMarcus Aldridge was going to leave before he did. Like, he's on his way out. We need to train Myers Leonard to, you know, get him ready to play more minutes. the front office didn't like him saying that information. They fired him. And so that kind of stunted his development there. So he lost his guy there. Then he finally gets, you know, kind of in that starting role. It was kind of, you know, a square peg through a round hole. He was playing alongside Mason Plumlee at the time, and things just weren't kind of working. And he got hurt. He had a shoulder problem that really affected his shooting stroke for that whole season. And then when he came back, you know, they discovered that Al-Farouq Aminu is a pretty solid option at power forward. So minutes in the post got pretty tight, especially with Ed Davis playing well too. And so it's just kind of a lack of opportunity. And when he is on the court, I think you can almost see the gears grinding as far as like what he knows what he has to do, but he has to think about it. I don't think anything comes naturally in his role right now as far as quick reactions go. But he can shoot when he's given space. I mean, it's not the fastest release, but if he's playing at center, he's usually going to have space to shoot. He has the size to play defense in the post. I mean, just by staying vertical, and he's got the body to hold people out of the paint as an anchor. It's just a matter of staying vertical and staying out of foul trouble. It's just putting it all together, and that's easier said than done. And, you know, it's hard to imagine. I don't know how many cases there are of guys that just suddenly put it together at this point in their career, but you know, everybody's hopeful in Portland because he is a super nice guy in the community. He does a lot for that. Just a high character guy as far as he doesn't really complain about his role. I mean, yeah, he says some stuff in the exit interviews, but it's obvious frustration. But everybody on the team basically likes him, which for a guy making that much money in a limited role, I mean, you can't really complain. But that's basically the abridged version of the Myers-Leonard Portland story.
Perfect.
Talking about guys breaking out, though, who would be your breakout starter for next season?
I think it's probably Maurice Harkless. I think he had some consistency problems last year. He was in the starting lineup and then got benched about halfway through the season, and it really wasn't due to injury. It was just due to some effort questions, I believe, and what he kind of thought his role should be in that lineup and what the coaching staff thought his role should be. He did play much better down the stretch, and you're looking for longer than a 30-game stretch from him playing at a high level, and I think he's capable of doing that. I think he's such a confidence guy, and that was his thing in Orlando and why it didn't work out there. And I think the team willing to roll with him and give him a second chance later that year and then playing him into the playoffs, I think probably did a lot for him, and I wouldn't be surprised if he puts together a full season of playing well this next year.
Yeah, Harkless was my pick as well. I mean, 3-point shooting wise, he's, you know, I know that in 2016, 2017 that he like stopped shooting threes because of an incentive in his contract. But last year he shot 41%. And you know, I didn't know about the effort thing, but if that's the only issue, then, you know, I feel confident that, you know, seeing probably a bigger role in the future for him, working hard, I think he has a really big opportunity to be, you know, that, like you mentioned, that starting small forward for a duration of the season. And I like the fit, you know, obviously next to McCollum and Lillard, he's a knockdown shooter. So I like Harkless to break out as well.
Yeah, same thing over here for Harkless. You just look at the starting lineup, he just seems like the guy most likely to break out. And I remember last year around the playoffs when people saw that he was going to come back for the series, they got really excited for this late, you know, late play in the season. But breakout bench player for the Blazers.
I think I'm gonna go for the another year in a row of a former second round pick kind of just finally getting some minutes and looking capable of being a on the floor contributor is Jake Layman. I think Layman can play a little bit. I mean, coming out of Maryland, he was predicted to play a little bit of stretch four, and it's something I've wrote about a couple times this year. I think he can play small forward. I think with him, it's just a matter of being assertive and believing in your shot that it will go in, and I think he can be a floor spacer. I think athletically he can hold his own against most guys on the defensive end. And I think it's just a matter of him getting, you know, some minutes, and I think he's equipped to battle for some of those. And he looked good in summer league. This was the most assertive I've seen him look. And it's obvious that they're really kind of testing if he can play power forward. There were stretches in summer league where he was the tallest player he was basically playing the five for Portland for some stretches, if the lineup allowed for it. mean, obviously he's not going to play five in the NBA, but he could definitely probably play some minutes at power forward. And he's another guy who on that second unit, if the goal is to surround Evan Turner with shooters, Jake Layman definitely fits that at the power forward position. And that's if you're playing Zach Collins at the five. So you could theoretically roll out a lineup that, you know, is surrounding Evan Turner with four guys capable of knocking down shots from outside.
Yeah, I'm going with Seth Curry. I'm expecting him to come back strong from this injury. I'm expecting him to be the scoring leader off the bench. I'm also expecting some of those three guard lineups we saw last year with Napier, McCollum, like we saw last year with Napier, McCollum, and Lillard, but with Curry instead. I think Curry's going to average a career high in points. I think he's going to be a big part of their 3-point attack. So I'm going to go with Seth Curry.
I'm going to go with Zach Collins. You know, we mentioned Ed Davis being out and there going to be more room for minutes. And I think a full offseason, you know, with an NBA staff will help Zach Collins put on weight and get more minutes. And we saw some nice things at the end of last season from him. But talking wins, what is best case scenario for the Blazers next year?
I think it comes down to a couple of those teams I mentioned that are in the Portland's division, how they play against them heads up. If they're able to, you know, establish themselves against teams like the Timberwolves, the Jazz, the Nuggets, you know, if they can play on par, you know, kind of get the edge in those, I think in an absolute best case scenario, if everybody stays healthy and Zach Collins develops, I think there's a path to 50 wins. It's a very tight rope to walk, but I mean, this is a best case scenario. So I think if they do well in division and in their conference and, you know, can continue to kind of take care of business when they play the Eastern Conference, I could see a win total in the low 50s in an absolute best case scenario.
I think best case scenario would be the exact season they had last year, basically, you know, 49-33, finishing in the top four in the Western Conference. Obviously, Lillard and McCollum are studs. Maybe Nurkic, you know, is a little bit more consistent, can stay on the floor longer. And then that bench unit actually becomes something that can take some of the load off, some scoring load off of, you know, that backcourt duo.
Yeah, 48-49 wins for me. I think just the West got better and, you know, they lost some guys. Maybe they can make some improvements though and get back to that level. What do you think's best case scenario playoff wise? Can they get past the first round or is it, you know, first round and out?
I think it's very matchup dependent with what Portland does. If they're playing a team that has a guard that can defend Damian Lillard one-on-one, like a Drew Holiday, it's going to be a problem. But I think there's definitely, anytime you have two guys that are as talented as CJ and Dame, there's a path to get out of that first round. I mean, both guys had 50-point games last year in the regular season. And I mean, really, to catch two wins and, you know, you just got a clean house at home and you have to have one of those guys have, you know, a hot game on the road, and that Portland definitely has the players capable of doing that. I think second round would probably be, it's tough in the Western Conference because every team is excellent that it's going to make the playoffs. I mean, they're all legit teams. There's not a lot of holes, but I think they could, there's a path to the second round for Portland if everything breaks right.
I don't know. I think they would have to have home court for me to think this team can make it past the first round. And I just don't know if they're going to be able to be in that kind of position again like they were last year. And then again, like it matchups is going to, like you mentioned, it's going to be a big thing, like kind of who they line up against. But rather right now, I don't see a second round appearance for the Portland Trailblazers this year.
What would be worst case scenario for the Blazers next year?
I think the thing that always worries me is you look at, you know, the synergy numbers at the end of the year and the player tracking, and CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard are always kind of near the top of the list as far as distance traveled and minutes played. And it, eventually, you know, Portland has had good luck with injuries, but I mean, the worst case would be, you know, one of those guys gets hurt and is out of the lineup for an extended amount of time, because it's one thing to hope Seth Curry comes back from his injury in a bench role. It's another thing to hope Seth Curry comes back from an injury and is your starter every night. Like that's a pretty steep drop off. And I just don't think Portland offensively is equipped to deal with that type of drop off. I mean, they've done well in short bursts when Dame has been out of the lineup. Like, CJ has stepped up into that role, and they've had in the past guys like Alan Crabb step into a bigger role when that happens, and they've done fine. But, you know, you're talking a 7-game stretch, whereas if it's 15, 20 games, I mean, Portland could really put themselves in a hole, especially in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I think worst case scenario would be, like a 44 win season or a 43 win season. They just missed the playoffs because obviously we know the Western Conference is really tight. They take a slight step back. Maybe it's not injuries, but the team just isn't good enough because of the other teams in the Western Conference. And then, you know, being in the middle of the pack and finishing like in that 9 or 10 seed range is just really never good for any direction your team is trying to go forward in.
Yeah, worst case, similar to Steve. I think if they lose one of either Dame or CJ for a long time, they probably miss the playoffs. They're probably in the 30-win range, not 30, but like 36 wins or something if they were to lose Dame or CJ for a long time. But actual prediction on the season?
I think I ran through the schedule. I did something on this a few weeks ago, and I think it's right around 45 to 48 wins for me. I really feel like if everybody's healthy, there's a lot of games that Portland just takes care of on the road and at home. And those are games that veteran teams know how to take care of. In Portland now with, this group that's been together for a few seasons, they know they can count on each other late in games. And, when you're on the third game in 5 days in Atlanta and you're down by two and, 2 minutes to go, Portland's equipped to, gut out that win. Like, I mean, those happen to teams where it's like, traditionally, like a team that might not be as experienced, like a team in Denver, they might not be closing out that game every night. Like, they still might be learning how to finish those games, even against teams that you should be beating. And that's something Portland's able to do. And they really just have to take care of the teams that are slotted to be below them. And then they always play, like, especially around the All-Star break, like, if Damian Lillard doesn't make the All-Star break, he's out to prove that he should be in it. If he does make the All-Star game, he's usually one of the last guys in, so he's out to prove that he belongs there. So there's going to be games in that stretch that Portland will probably win against teams that are above them in the standings, and that's kind of where I land on that 45 to 48 wins.
Yeah, I'm going with 45 wins. I think they end up being a playoff team, either a 7 or an 8 seed. I think Lillard does make an All-Star appearance again as a reserve. And this team is steady. They're tough defensively, and they're led by that backcourt duo. But come playoff time, it's just not enough in a 7-game series.
Yeah, for me, I think around 44, 45 wins. They're right on the cusp of the playoffs. They're either right in the 8th or 7th seed, or they just miss it. I'll give my final playoff predictions later on, but I think they're right around that range. They can definitely move up a few spots, but I think based off of the West, they'll be right on the bottom. But the truth, what emoji represents the Blazers for you?
I think this offseason, just because of the not being able to really bring anybody in, and then just CJ has kind of had a real rough time with the interactions on social media. So I think I'm gonna do the hand covering the face for right now, just because I think it's been rough. I think Kevin Durant definitely looks snappy in his interaction with CJ McCollum, but it's definitely one of those things where it's like, hey, you probably shouldn't be talking like that to a team that, swept you 2 years ago and has won the championship 2 years in a row. So I'm going to go with the hand over the face emoji for right now.
For me, I'm going with the okay emoji. Because I think this team is going to be okay. I think they're going to be steady, but I'm not too high and I'm not too low on them. I just think they're going to be a decent, okay squad.
For me, I'm going to go with like the nervous smile, with the sweat coming down. I think, things seem okay, but there could be some cause for concern later on if things don't go well. There's been talk about Dame wanting in other players, but I know other reports have been Dame super happy in Portland, but the direction of the team, how much better can they get with the cap options they have? So for me, I think it's like a nervous smile. League pass rating, where do they stand 1 through 10?
I think if you're a Portland fan, I mean, this is the same thing. But if you're watching this on League Pass, you might not be, you know, a regular Portland fan. So I think anytime you get to watch guys like Dame and CJ who are, you know, incredibly offensively talented, they're fun to watch. And I mean, I mentioned it just a few moments ago. I mean, both guys had 50-point games last year. Anytime you tune in to watch Portland, that could happen. And then also, I mean, Yusuf Nurkic can get under guys' skin. So that's always interesting to watch. I would say probably – I think they're probably one of the more exciting teams to watch just because of the offense. So I'm going to say a 7 out of 10 on the league pass rating.
I'm a little bit lower. I'm going to go with a 4.5.
Ooh.
I mean, okay, granted, too, I go to bed kind of early. I'm more of an East Coast guy. But I think for me, I mean, I think that Lillard and McCollum are always going to be fun to watch. I'm intrigued to see how Seth Curry comes in. But I don't know. I don't see a ton of intrigue with the young guys this team has. And I just think they're going to be, you know, the middle of the pack in the West, you know, a low-seeded playoff team or just out of the playoffs. So I just don't see a ton of intrigue for me personally.
So I'm going to go with a 6. And then around All-Star time when Dame's catching fire, it's probably like a 7.5. But throughout the season, it's going to be a 6. I think Dame and CJ are entertaining. You know, some of the other guys have a little bit of excitement, but there's other teams I'd rather watch. But what TV show would you rather – what TV show would you watch over the Blazers? You know, this is a hypothetical. Gun to your head, what show are you picking?
Right now, me and my wife are currently binging Ozarks on Netflix. So I would probably definitely stick it out with that. And I think eventually Game of Thrones is going to be back on TV. So I will definitely choose probably both those. Definitely Game of Thrones at any point.
For me, I'm going with Band of Brothers. It's another HBO document. Well, not really a documentary series. HBO series where they go over some of the airborne unit during World War II. It's like a 10-part series. Directed by Spielberg, so you know it's really good. I've watched that about 47 times. But, yeah, it's, you know, if I'm trying to go to sleep, I'd rather watch something that I've seen again, and maybe, you know, put me to sleep a little bit faster.
I'm going to go with Breaking Bad. You know, Corey used this recently, but pretty much the same thoughts he had. You know, you watch it 2 times, a 3rd time, I don't think it's going to be as exciting. So it's still up there as a great show, but the Blazers only a 6. I think it's a fair matchup. Any last thoughts on the Blazers before we get out of here?
I think with Portland, it's the big thing that we didn't kind of touch on is you're gonna watch around the trade deadline. If Portland doesn't look like they're in a position to really compete for in the playoffs, and that's like one of those ones where they feel like they at least don't have a 50-50 shot in a first-round matchup as the roster's constructed, I wouldn't be surprised if a guy like Al-Farouq Aminu gets unloaded just because how his – contract matches up. If he is shipped out and not much is brought back in return, Portland will dip just under the tax line. And so they can avoid the repeater tax going forward. So that's definitely something I think every Blazer fan will be watching, is to see how competitive they are before the All-Star break, because that could have serious implications at the deadline as far as moving salary to get below the tax line.
What are your thoughts on Dame and CJ being traded? Obviously, it's been rumored a lot. You know, Dame, highly unlikely. But CJ has been mentioned. Do you think that's a possibility we could see this season or no?
I really don't. I don't think so. I think even if the front office came around to trading CJ, I don't, you know, I love CJ McCollum. Let me say that outright. I like what he brings as a player. But as a trade asset, just because of where his salary is at, I don't know how big of a market there actually is for a CJ McCollum and what you would get in return. I mean, obviously, if the goal is to keep Dame and, you know, build on that, on his arc as far as where his prime is, you're not going to really want, you know, 2 dimes and a nickel for a quarter. So I don't see it happening. I don't see Dame getting traded just because he has so many years left on his contract. I mean, he'd really have to leverage his way out. And as far as what Damian Lillard has been as a brand, that would be very off-brand for him to leverage his way out of Portland at this point. It doesn't mean it can't happen in the future, especially if, you know, things don't work out. But I really don't see either of them getting moved at this point.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think McCollum, if there's anyone who has a chance, it's probably McCollum. I don't think they would trade Lillard. And Lillard's been pretty adamant that he wants to spend, his entire career in Portland, that he loves it there. He wants, to try and bring a title. So I don't think it'd be good for fans if they were to lose Lillard. So I think unless Lillard, obviously leveraged himself out, but I just don't see that happening. I think McCollum has more of a chance to be traded, but still, I don't see it happening. I think you got to stay with these guys.
Any last thoughts on the Blazers from you, Corey?
Just keep grinding with the backcourt duo.
Steve, tell everyone where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your work.
So I'm regular on Blazers Edge, and I do some NBA draft coverage throughout the year at Ridiculous Upside, which is also a great home for G League information as far as players coming up in two-way contracts and tracking those guys. You can find me on Twitter at Steve D Hoops. And I'm pretty regular on there. Always up to chat about basketball. So hit me up on there and look for my work on the Blazers as the season gets closer.
Big thanks to Steve for hopping on. As always, a pleasure, Corey. Thank everybody for listening. You can check out this show and all the other shows and previews on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio.
Thanks again, Steve. Peace out, knuckleheads.